We are working on Mary and Martha today, and I don't know about you, I wanted to preach about this passage because as a Martha myself, I get a little tired of the bad rap that she gets. I mean, how many of you ladies are a little tired of the whole Martha thing? Are you tired of it? Thank you. I needed that. Because, you know, I myself as an outstanding gold star Martha get a little tired of being picked on for that, don't you? Because I can tell you about the Martha times I've had. But anyway, we are studying the Gospel of Luke today, 38 through 42. And I did a little research into, you know, our friend Luke. And this gospel is written by Luke, a close friend and traveling companion of Paul. He was also known as the beloved physician, as we're well aware of. And he's also the writer of Acts. His focus is on, in terms of this gospel, is on the universal grace of God, meaning grace of God for everyone. It is the gospel of the Son of Man, emphasizing Christ's sympathetic attitude towards the poor, the lowly, the outcasts, the poor disciples, the sinful woman, our favorite Mary Magdalene, the Samaritans, the tax collectors, sinners, dying beggar, lepers, and a dying thief on the cross. It is a devotional gospel which emphasizes prayer and contains the three parables on prayer not found in the other gospels. It contains Christ's prayers, and some of the great hymns are taken from this gospel, such as the beautiful Ave Maria when Mary and Elizabeth are talking about the birth of Christ, and the Gloria in Excelsia. Of course, my favorite part is that this gospel highly honors women and womanhood. Womanhood. My mouth is so dry right now, this is all your fault. Women appear prominently in Luke's narrative as they do in Acts. My daughter Lydia was named after Lydia in the book of Acts. In chapter 1, we have Mary and Elizabeth. And in the chapter that we're studying today, chapter 10, we have Martha and Mary. And then later on, the daughters of Jerusalem, and then several widows throughout the gospel. And then, of course, we have the very detailed biography of Christ. So in the light of Mother's Day, I wanted to highlight one of the stories of famous women and see what we can learn from them. Thank you. So I call this part of our sermon Martha, Mary, and a whole lot of fussing. So let's go back to what this room might have looked like. They're all gathered in this small house. There's no sofa. There's no coffee table. There's no 56-inch TV on the wall. It's floor, rugs, and pillows on the floor, and maybe a long, low table where the food might have been put. And they're all laying around, literally laying. Some of them would have been laying on their side. Some would be sitting cross-legged. And the room is packed. And Martha is off to the side in her kitchen, busily boiling away and cutting and slicing and baking and doing all this stuff all by herself. Because after all, there was no microwave. There was certainly no electric oven. And there was certainly no toaster oven. And there was certainly no Instant Pot. Okay? No Instant Pot. I don't know how she did it. So she's in this room with all these folks, and her biggest priority right now is how's she going to feed all these people? I mean, this is a huge deal. The Son of God is in this room. She's got to feed all these people. The town leaders are here. The women of power are in this room. The whole city is in this room. The people that were important are in this room. The disciples are there. Her brother, her relatives, they're all in this room, and the pressure's on. We don't know how many exactly. It could have been 30, it could have been 50, it could have been 10, but all we know is that she had the pressure on her back. And in this day and age, it wasn't just dinner, but it was all about places and time and who's who. The women, they didn't get to sit in the front. They didn't get to sit down and listen. The women were supposed to be in the back, and they had to serve. It wasn't their place to sit and listen. What do you think was the most important and special guest here? Well, of course, it was Christ. So who wouldn't have been extremely nervous about having the perfect meal for Jesus himself at this time? So there was a lot of pressure on Martha. A long time ago, after Sunday, we had President Hazen. I don't know if any of you know who he was. He was the president of Gardner Bible College when we were pastoring up in Church Bridge, Saskatchewan, Canada. And I'll never forget the pressure of that dinner. I mean, it was just unbelievable. I had the president of the Bible college in my little kitchen, and I was so nervous, and I was so uptight, just afraid he wouldn't think of the right things about me. And then I was so wrong, because President Hazen spent the whole time sitting there teaching Christopher how to do a raspberry, and my 6 months, I think it might have been 8 months old son, learned how to do a raspberry thanks to President Hazen and didn't forget till he was like 4 or 5 years old. Thank you, President Hazen. And then also in this room, seated at the feet of Jesus, was Mary. And she was taking it all in, just listening adoringly and listening to every word and just taking her time and just sitting there peacefully and quietly. How enraging for Martha. I mean, you know, come on. But Mary is given the attribute here of knowing the better part, the more important part. But her responsibility was also to help, because she was also a woman, and she was an equal hostess. This was also her house. She was the sister, and she was the sister of Lazarus and Martha. Perhaps the parents had died and left these three the house. We don't know, but we just know that the three of them lived in this house. She recognized the importance of his words and the value of his time. She got who he was. Somehow she knew what he was about to do and who he was. So she was sitting there, and all she wanted to do was sit in his presence and learn. So the dynamic of this room is a room filled with men of high respect, women of high regard and high respect, a religious teacher, relatives, townsfolk, women of the church community, a very powerful room, a room full of lots of dynamics. You see, to understand that, you have to go back a little bit in time. See, we didn't have churches like this right here, where we're all sitting around having a good time, drinking our coffee or our water. The synagogue was a very strict place. The men were all up in front, and sometimes behind a screen or up in the balcony were the women. Sometimes if it was a poorer or smaller synagogue, the women would sit in the back with a cord behind, so there was a definite definition between male and female. So it was quite different. And for Mary to be sitting there in front of all these people at the feet of Jesus was a little bit scary. And you have to admit that there was no Bill and Gloria Gaither singing. There was no Wren Collective. There were no drums. There were no fun music. It was all very much a patterned type of worship, very much practiced throughout the years and very much taught from age 7 on up. It was a different world altogether. And there was Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus, front and center, a single woman and a single man. And you have to also remember that this was also the woman that later washes his feet with expensive perfume and is criticized by Thomas for not selling it. This is a woman that risks public scrutiny, judgment, disdain, and not to mention physical harm for the sake of sitting at the feet of Jesus to learn and worship. So what's going on here exactly? So I'm going to propose a little bit more of what you obviously see in the scripture. You see an upset sister, you see some fussing and fuming, but you also see, if you look a little bit deeper and in between the lines, you see the change of religious and political order. Remember, Christ came not only to save us and bring us to redemption, but he came to change up the kingdom of God. He came to earth and to mankind to shake it up. I'm not going to go into all the details and all the stories and everything, because that would be a 3-month Bible series on the kingdom of God and political order and all that, because we're not going to do that now. We're not going to run through all that. Trust me, you're okay. You're going to get out of here by 3, no problem. Remember all that pastor buildup? But as learned Christians, you know that Christ came to shake it up and to bring a different kind of kingdom altogether than what the disciples were expecting. A kingdom where Jew, Greek, Gentile, male, female, poor, rich, white, black, and on the list goes, are all called into the kingdom and all are received. I don't know about you, but I know that change is not met with enthusiasm. How many times have you heard the 7 deadliest words in the church? Does anybody know what those are? I was going to let you say it. We've never done it this way before. We've always done it this way. Yep. If I've heard that once, I've heard it a million times. We were young and innocent seminary students, having just graduated from seminary and no place to go. And all of a sudden, I get this crazy call from this Canadian guy named Lyle Mund, eh? And through a long series of events, which I'll talk about later, we ended up pastoring Churchbridge, Saskatchewan, Canada. And we go up there, and here we are, 2 wet behind the ears kids, 24, and we were going to change the world. You know, this was the era, this was the 80s, and we were one of 10 couples that were going to co-pastor. And we were going to come in there, barrels going, and we were going to change that church and help them all learn to do it the American way. And I'll just go into a little background of this church. It was a German church, and it had only been speaking English for 11 years. I think that's probably all I need to say. You can laugh at us all you want, because trust me, we've done that too. So the first few months went well. But then Christmas started to roll around, and I wanted to do a youth choir. And so we had a number of sweet little children who'd all been raised in the church and were wonderful singers and so beautiful and cute and everything. So I happened to come across this wonderful little musical called, what was the name of it? And A Sheep Shall Lead Them or something. And it was about all these little animals, sheep and cows and goats and donkeys, telling the gospel story about the birth of Christ. I mean, what could be better, right? Join me. Come on, what could be better? Anybody know how Germans think? Not yet, huh? Okay. So I had no clue. So then I asked all the moms to make puppets, and some of those women, they could sew like there was no tomorrow. They made the cutest little lamb puppets and goat puppets and cow and horse puppets. And we built a little stage, and then the big night came, and we had this wonderful musical. The kids sang along to the record because, of course, they weren't loud enough. But anyway, it was a wonderful time. It was had by all until the board meeting the next night. Because Monday nights are always board meetings. And I was really excited about what I pulled off, you know. 21 kids sang that night. And I walk into the board meeting, and there's all these grumpy farmers. And I'm like, okay, we'll sit down. I figure they're having a bad day. And they all look at me, and they go, how dare you? I'm like, what? What are you talking about? You brought puppets into the church. This was 1986. What's wrong with puppets in the church? Well, we don't believe that animals can talk. And you've told our children that animals can talk, and we have to kill those animals in the springtime for harvest, and you've now told them that they tell the gospel story, and we're going to have to slay those animals this spring, and we don't particularly appreciate it. And I'm like, okay. And so I was in trouble for a good 3 weeks on that one. The people were talking in town. Let me tell you, that there's a coffee shop at the edge of Church Bridge that everybody has to drive through to get out of town, and you can always feel it on the back of your neck that when they're talking about you, because pastors Robin and Emmett would drive by in that little yellow citation right there, and you could feel it. There they go, those pastors in a Halloween party. And it wasn't a Halloween party, it was a fall celebration. The newspaper put it as a Halloween party. I was in trouble for that one too. But anyway, that was just the start of our ministry there. But I learned that puppets are not to tell the gospel story in a rural Canadian church. So that, my friend, is change for you. So they still do puppets to this day. I apparently had some effect later on, but it took a while, a long while. But anyway, fast forward a few years, and we're pastoring Tulalip Church of God. And if I had a nickel for every time that I heard, Marge wouldn't have done it that way. Marge wouldn't have done it that way. Well, Pastor Adam wouldn't have done it that way. Well, Marge would never have said that. That's right. Marge wouldn't have said that because Marge died 3 years ago, okay? And we are now pastoring. But you can't say that. You just have to say, oh, okay, Marge wouldn't have said it that way. And then, of course, at Tulalip, there was the great and biggest, hugest change that I ever committed was I cleaned out Marge's office so that we could have counseling appointments in that office without recipe books stacked high to the ceiling and files overflowing and calendars from 1956 everywhere. So me and Francis, we cleaned it all out and got it all cleaned up, and we decided that for the sake of privacy, we needed to move the coffee pot that the band sang. When they sang and practiced every Wednesday night, you have to remember this band was not a worship band, okay? This was a bar band that used to sing in the bars, and then they also did worship later on. So after a few years, Adam got them saved, and between the country western music that started before church and then the worship music, they were sort of a worship / bar band. So it was a really interesting mixture of culture that we had to deal with there, and it was fun. It was fun, but it was interesting. Let's just put it that way. But anyway, so Francis and I got, of course, Francis, when I got in trouble, Francis was nowhere to be seen, but we decided we'd move that coffee pot into the nursery so that the band could use it during their practice, and then that office could remain locked, as pastors' offices are supposed to be locked because they contain confidential information many times, and you cannot have access to the public. So we did that lovely little change. And church started on Sunday, and here comes Pat Brown, big, huge man, guitar player, leader of the church, barreling down the church aisle as we're about to start service. What'd you do with my coffee pot? You moved my coffee pot. How could you move my coffee pot? That coffee pot's been there for 20 years. You cannot move my coffee pot. And so that was the first debacle at Tulalip Church of God. I moved the coffee pot. So change comes at a price in the church, trust me. And we don't always do well with change. On my 39th birthday, as I was approaching, on my 39th year, as I was approaching my 40th birthday, the pastor's wives of the Pacific Northwest Inland Empire Association, now known as the PNA, but Idaho, we were pastoring in Moscow, Idaho at that time, decided to go on a river tubing trip. And we were going to relax in the sunshine and have a wonderful day of floating down the Snake River and enjoy lunch on the beach somewhere and just have a wonderful time getting together and fellowshipping as sisters in the Lord often do. So plans were made, inner tubes were purchased and blown up and put in the back of a huge van, and 13 of us women drove south from Lewiston, and I drove south from Moscow, and those women drove north from Lewiston up into the Clearwater area. And we approached the Snake River, and I'm getting excited, thinking we're about to turn off. And because how many of you know the Snake River? It's a very, yes, good, thank you. It's a very wide and beautiful, slow-moving river. Peaceful, warm, very hot, but slowly moving. Very nice river to inner tube down. Well, the van proceeded over and across the Snake River, and this is where I start to get worried. Because I thought we were inner tubing on the Snake River. And I, as the Snake River is in the rearview mirror and back there, I'm like asking Dale, what's going on? Oh no, we're doing the Clearwater. Have any of you ever heard of the Clearwater River? Claims four lives a summer. Yeah. And apparently Dale was not aware of this. None of the pastor's wives were aware of this. We were all from other parts. I, however, living in Moscow, was aware of this because it came up on the news every summer. So I'm like, what? And so I, not being one to rock the boat at that time, now I would have definitely rocked the boat. Age is wonderful. So we continue on up, and we find the beach that we're going to cast off on. And so the inner tubes come out, and the lunches come out, and the ice chest comes out, and the life jackets come out and everything, and we're all packing things up. And so Dale and the other gals, they start putting the life jackets on top of the ice chest to keep the ice chest cold. Because it's really important that when you're rafting down a river, that your lunch does not get hot, right? So they put all the life jackets on there, had a bungee cord, and tucked it up, and then put the chest on the inner tube, tied it to the inner tube, and then they picked me to be the one whose inner tube was going to be tied to the ice chest, okay? So now you get the picture. I'm on an inner tube, and then there's an ice chest with life jackets on this inner tube, and I'm going to get in this river tied to another inner tube with an ice chest on it and go down the river. And at this time, the Clearwater River was, it was mid-August, and my birthday was coming in a few weeks, and it had to be the beginning of August, but it was hot. And the river was a little bit fast, to say the least, because we had runoff coming from up north. And so, but it just looked like it was that deep, you know? And so it was no big deal, right? How many of you know the Clearwater River? You know where I'm going. So we all get in, all of us start in on these inner tubes, and we get in our little butts on these things, and we start floating down the river. Well, the first one screamed when she hit a rock and flipped over and started going down without her inner tube. And then I got into the current, and because all of you engineers are going to know exactly what's going on here, because I have a very heavy object in the water in front of me now, it's pulling me down the river at a rapid pace. And all of a sudden, the 30 seconds that I was in the river became 3 hours because everything slowed down as complete and horrible disaster occurred. So the ice chest hits the current, and begins to pull me at this rapid rate down this river, and the 6 inches that I'm in, let's just put it this way, I gained a lot of weight during that time period of my life, and I weighed about 120 pounds more, okay? So even now, it didn't work, okay? And so I began to hit rocks, and I began to get tense because I'm hitting rocks, my knees are starting to get it, and then I see a big, huge rock, and this chest is throwing me around this rock, fortunately, and I go up and over the rock and land in the water. Unfortunately, that water was a little deeper, but then the thing took off again, and I'm seeing another pile of rocks, and I'm going to hit those rocks. And I'm traveling at this immense amount of speed, my knees are hitting rocks, and all of a sudden I'm deep, and then I'm shallow again, and then I'm deep, and then I'm shallow, and it's going crazy, and I'm hearing all these women screaming, because they're all coming off of their inner tubes, And some of them have the luck to get on the beach right away, but me, no, I'm in the current because I'm being pulled at a rapid pace by an ice chest with life jackets on top. Any of you see a problem here? So I'm being pulled and I'm starting to panic and I'm seeing a huge pile of rocks and that thing is heading right for those rocks and I'm thinking, I'm going to die. And my mind goes to our trailer back in Moscow and I'm thinking, Emmett's in the trailer with the two kids. I'm thinking about Lydia and Christopher. They were 6 and 4, somewhere in there. And I didn't want to die. I was like, I'm going to drown here. And I just remember looking up in this beautiful blue sky. I remember saying, God, I don't want to die. Help me. I'm scared. Jesus! And I'm running down the river, and that rock is coming, and all of a sudden, I hear a voice. And I'm kidding. I'm not making this up. I hear God just say, let go and let me. And I'm like, I'm traveling at 3,000 miles an hour within 30 seconds. And I just had to, okay. And I just stretched out, and I just tried to relax as best I could. By now, I'm off the inner tube. I'm hanging on to my inner tube. The other inner tube is pulling. It never occurred to me, not even once, to let go, because I would have lost everybody's lunches. And at that time, what people thought about me mattered more to me than my own life, apparently. So I just, and then of course I was a little afraid I'd drown and not have something to hang on to. So I kept hanging on to that inner tube. It kept going at this massive speed. And so I let go and let go and I relaxed. And all of a sudden I started to glide over rocks rather than hitting them. And so I glided over that huge pile of rocks. The water was going right over and I dumped right down. And then the channel started to go this way away from the beach. And then I started to panic a little because there was everybody on the beach. And I start screaming, and they thought I was laughing and having a good time. No, I'm scared, because I know this is going to pile out into the Snake River, and that there's a waterfall way up ahead. And I'm thinking, this isn't funny. And so I'm screaming, help. And then my friend Julie fortunately heard me and saw what was going on. And so they formed a chain, and they really quick formed a chain, and they grabbed the rope between the two and pulled me in and pulled me to shore. And I was madder than a wet hen because I didn't think it was funny. I had just about drowned. So in true Women of the Church of God style, we unpacked those life jackets and put them on. The Marthas, me, decided that we should wear those life jackets instead of put them on top of the ice chest. So then we sat down and had lunch for a little while, and then we wore the life jackets, and we continued on. And it was still a dangerous trip. I got sucked down again, but the life jacket pulled me back up. But that river was something else, and it does claim 4 people a year, and it's very dangerous. And if we'd had the Marthas with us and the Marthas planning, they probably would have made sure that we were wearing those life jackets from the get-go, or that we might have stayed in the Snake River like we were supposed to do in the first place. But that's what can happen when we don't have the Marthas going on. I see, I'm standing up for the Marthas today. So going back to our room and dinner and all the people gathered around, what do you think was really going on with Martha? I mean, yes, she had too much to do and too little time. She had a huge amount of pressure on her. But I'm just wondering if there couldn't have been just a little something more that maybe she was worried about. Because we talked a little bit earlier about this huge change that was going on in the kingdom, that Jesus was bringing about a political change, a massive difference in the way the culture worked and the way women and men functioned together and the way Greek and Jews functioned. And he's bringing about this huge change. So maybe Martha was a little bit concerned about her sister. Have you ever been in church where the kids are dancing in front and carrying on and you're trying to quietly get them to come and maybe not be right in front of the pastor when he's preaching or she's preaching and you're just going, get over here. Or somebody's just maybe doing something inappropriate in church and you're kind of like, I kind of wonder if that's not what Martha's doing here. You know, Jesus, can't you get her back in the kitchen? Because people are looking at her. She's going to be in trouble here. You know, she needs to be in the kitchen with me. That's a safe place for her right now. And Jesus points out in front of everybody, no, this is the better portion for her. She has made the right choice. Imagine the silence in the room, because everybody was probably expecting her to do exactly what she was told. She was probably supposed to go sit down and shut up, just like all the women are supposed to do at this time. And Jesus encouraged her not to. Sometimes the Marthas, me, are here to remind us of reality and what we need to do and what's important, because when we do have people come for dinner, we do need to serve them food. That is really the appropriate thing to do. But we don't have to go overboard, you know. I used to cook a turkey and ham whenever I had people over for dinner, and it was not uncommon for me on Christmas Eve to stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning making sure all the meals were prepared, everything was cooked, the salads were done. There was even one Christmas where I stayed up to make sure that the aquarium was clean because I wanted the fish to have a good Christmas. I mean, those fish did not deserve that algae on that aquarium for Christmas Day, right? I mean, that's only fair. So Mom was tired and grouchy all day on Christmas Day because she stayed up to clean the algae off the aquarium. Now, would 60-year-old Robin Thrower do that? No, forget it. No way. 30-year-old Robin Thrower did that. Stupid stuff like that. I mean, how many of you do stupid stuff like that because you're worried about what people are going to think, or you want Christmas to be perfect, or you want the dinner to be perfect? Okay, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands. I might be the only one. Thank you. Thank you. Amen, sister. If it weren't for Mary and Martha to show us this, that sometimes Marthas are okay. They remind us that we have to slow down. We have to do all the details. We have to remember to put the life jackets on. We've got to remember to get the stove on and do all the details. But then we've got Mary there to remember that we have to slow down and take care of us. See, if I'm busy working away 9 hours, 10 hours a night, and making sure the house is going smooth and making sure everything's perfect, I'm not taking care of me. And then I'm not taking care of me again, and later on, and pretty soon I'm having a nervous breakdown, or I'm in the hospital, or people aren't liking me because I'm grouchy all the time. So Mary's there to remind us to keep it in check, to keep a balance going. And that's what Jesus is saying here, is that we need to balance the difference between work and faith. Balance the difference between giving too much and not giving enough. And that's what this story is about, is balance, and it's about faith, it's about change. I wanted to preach a sermon about change, and I found the scripture and worked it all together because, I saw this change in here, but also because we're dealing with some changes. Matter of fact, I heard somebody say today, this morning, as I walked around the corner, I heard somebody say, it's just changing. Everything's changing. And it's true. Everything is changing. When my grandmother was alive, to her, the word cell meant somebody was in jail. To us, I'm going to grab my cell. It means my phone, my lifeline, my computer, my email, my texting, my pictures of my puppy, everything. My cell is everything. My grandmother grew up in a time period when a horse and buggy was a pretty fashionable way to ride. She died with a car in her garage that she couldn't drive for years. But the amount of change that went on during my grandmother's 102 years on this earth, it was amazing the stuff we dealt with and the stuff we deal with now. Do you remember the first TV we had? It literally took three people to carry it into the house. Now you can go buy a TV at Costco, take it out of the box, pin it up on the wall. It weighs maybe 10 pounds, 20 if you're lucky, and you're done. You just hook it up to the Wi-Fi and away you go. Things have changed. Things have changed in our church. We have a lot going on, don't we? But things have changed, and we don't like it. But it's a good thing, because change brings about good things. Not always. Change in our life hasn't been always that good, but coming out of it has brought good things. When my daughter died, it wasn't a very good change. I was really mad. How dare you kill yourself? I'll teach you to take yourself out of this world. I brought you in. I'll tell you when you can take yourself out. You don't do that to your mother on Mother's Day. It wasn't on Mother's Day, but every Mother's Day I'm reminded of that and how angry I was with her. But you know, out of that change, we've grown. We're still married, aren't we, honey? Yep. Did you know 50% of couples that lose a child end in divorce? I'm not divorcing him. I'm not letting him get away with it. Change is hard. We lost our dogs recently, as I told you, and that's really, really hard. There's no tails wagging at the door. Jane burst into tears the other day when she came to visit me because Chloe wasn't there banging her tail against the door, greeting her with a sloppy kiss. It's too quiet at our house. That change is really hard, but I'll tell you what, there's going to be a harder change in about 2 weeks. I'd forgotten, I have some scars all over my hand right now, and I'd forgotten how needle-sharp puppy teeth are. I was bleeding yesterday. It's going to be an awesome change, but it's going to be a hard one. We're going to have to teach not to bite, not to chew, not to jump on the counters, not to eat this, not to do that, not to run off, Don't bite my friend. Don't do this. Don't chew up the table. Don't eat the toilet paper. Don't do this. Don't do that. You know, don't howl in the middle of the night because you're lonely. All of that stuff. It's going to take a year. So it's going to be a happy change, but it's going to be a very busy change at our house. When it comes to change, we don't like it, but we have to deal with it on a daily basis. I'm having to deal with change. I look in the mirror and I don't know who that person is. Where are those fat, rosy cheeks that used to be there? But when I lost 130 pounds, that went away and my face went down like this. People think I'm mean and nasty all the time because I have this funny looking face because it's like, so, but change is hard. You have to deal with it. But we look in the mirror and that wasn't the person we feel that we are because change has occurred. But I'm here to tell you that we are going to make it through change because God is faithful. I warned you earlier on, I was going to tell you the rest of that story about seminary, and then I'm going to ask the musicians to come forward, and we're going to sing Great Is Thy Faithfulness, because that was one of our hymns in seminary that we sang all the time. We had a beautiful chapel at Anderson School of Theology. It was white with those beautiful mahogany trim. You know, Indiana is a beautiful place. They love wood there. I love wood, and the pews were this beautiful mahogany wood with white on the back, and it was just gorgeous. It was so inspiring to be in the chapel. I still miss church buildings like that. But anyway, we would sing all these wonderful Church of God hymns with all those baritones and basses and sopranos and tenors. And it was a wonderful time during those years. And I'll never forget when Emmett and I were graduating. We had it was May, and we had 2 or 3 weeks before graduation service. And at the time that you graduate from Anderson School of Theology, if you have a job that's hooked up with the Church of God Executive Council, which Emmett had, you lose your job because you're no longer a student and you lose your contract. I had already given my notice because I was 4 weeks pregnant, and I was afraid to work at a salad bar pregnant. It wasn't working out for me. I was a little ill. So it was a surprise. We were not expecting to be expecting at this time. And I knew that in about 2 weeks, we're going to lose our insurance because we had student insurance. We were going to lose Emmett's job. The rent was going to be due. It was $900 back then. That was a lot. And we had no place to go. And we were Church of God pastors looking for a church, but so far, no calls yet. And I was freaking out. You know, oh, what's going to happen, Lord? What's going to happen? And I'll never forget that time, that day, that beautiful morning in chapel, and the sun is shining through the windows on me. I can feel it. And I've got my hands on the front pew, and we're singing, Great is Thy Faithfulness, O Lord, O God, my Father. The faithfulness of God is amazing. And at that moment in time, I was so scared. I was afraid we were going to be homeless, and I was going to have to live with my mother to have this baby. What were we going to do? How were we going to get to California if we had to go to California? What were we going to do? Where were we going to go? And between that time and graduation, which was just a few weeks, we got a call from Canada. We had a candidate week scheduled. We graduated. I hit my 3.5 month period of pregnancy. We were past the scary time. And we graduated with hope, and we knew we were going somewhere because we at least had something on the plate, you know. And so then after graduation, we went up to Canada. We candidated for a week. And in Canada, candidating isn't just you preaching and they listen to you and they vote. No. You start out in the morning, you go for coffee. Coffee consists of cheese, ham, salami, pickles, olives, cookies, bar cookies, cake, everything you can possibly imagine. And then you drink the coffee, you talk, and then you go on to lunch, which again, you have all those items, and then you have a turkey or a ham, and then you go on to supper at the next church. And when you're pregnant, by this time, you're very ill. And then you have dinner, roast beef, mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, peas, corn, 2 pies, and so on and on it went for an entire week. I was very ill. But anyway, we had a wonderful time, and the Canadian farmers are amazing people. We had a wonderful time, and we fell in love with that church, and it was so awesome that Sunday they decided to vote, and we were voted in unanimously. I think there was a few nay votes from the people. We were told unanimously, and then later on we found out there was just a couple. But there's always a couple, okay? But anyway, we voted in, and so We went back to Anderson, and a month later, Lyle came down with a truck, and then we loaded up a U-Haul in his truck, and we drove straight north 3 days to Minnesota and into Alberta and on over to Saskatchewan. And 7-8 months later, Christopher was born in a hospital, and the biggest bill I paid was the $11 TV bill. God is great. Great and faithful is our God. Lydia was born a few years later. Didn't even have a TV bill on that one. So both my kids were born in Canada, and we didn't have to have insurance. It was wonderful. So God is faithful. God's going to get us through this difficult time, but this difficult time is because we do need to change. Change is difficult. It hurts. We get frustrated. Sometimes we like change because it's going to mean we're going to get something we want, but with everything that is positive, there's also a negative. So we just have to remember that Martha brings about all the details. Mary brings in the balance, reminds us to look to Jesus, sit at the feet of Jesus, remember that he's the one that's going to carry us through. Remember, we got to take care of the details. We got to do the work. We all have to help out. Let's bring those two together, and let's all work together as Mary and Martha and realize that God is faithful, and we are going to make it through this. Amen.